Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Oh, thank you so much, Rob, and I too would like to welcome everyone to the Cancer Care Connect Education Workshop, The Role of Nutrition, Exercise, and Meditation in Coping with Myeloproliferative Neoplasms, or MPNs. And today's program is supported by GlaxoSmithKline. I want to thank them for their support of today's program. And I also want to acknowledge that we have over 100 participants on the call today. And you come from all of the United States, from both urban, rural, suburban, and frontier communities. And we also have a number of international participants from Canada, the Philippines, Saudi Arabia, Uganda, and the United Kingdom. So this is a global call, and it's a credit to each of you that you've chosen to spend the next hour with us. And now, I'm going to move on and introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Ms. Diana Bearden. Ms. Bearden is an oncology dietitian, Michael E. DeBakey, VA Medical Center, and Ms. Bearden will be addressing causes of your weight loss or weight gain, strategies for managing your weight, common weight-related eating and hydration questions to ask your doctor and healthcare team, and nutrition and hydration concerns and tips. It is my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Bearden.
Thank you so much, Ms. Thank you so much, Carolyn. I'm so glad to be part of today's presentation. This is such an important topic. You know, there's a lot of stress and anxiety a lot of times going through cancer treatment, but then the side effects from the treatment can also be challenging itself while treating the disease. During your treatment journey, there's going to be several changes in your treatment plan potentially. With those treatments, the side effects are going to be unique to that treatment. And so there might be times in your treatment where you have no appetite, nothing tastes good. Maybe you're having side effects like nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, constipation, altered taste, smells may bother you. And then there might be times during your treatment where you have a great appetite and everything tastes wonderful and you don't have any side effects. And sometimes throughout your treatment, it can kind of ebb and flow. So these, there might be times here that you're doing well, other times where you're struggling a little bit more. And so your diet's going to change based on your side effects to the treatment that you're receiving. There's one thing I tell patients is, it's a season. You're going through a treatment. We're going to deal with it during this season. After the next changes happen, we'll deal with that. And I say that because the good news is some of the side effects that you're experiencing that are unpleasant won't last forever. And when you're struggling to eat, you know, the team is very important for you to connect with. Know your dietitian, talk to your doctor. Tell them what you're experiencing so they can help individualize your plan of care better. There might be medications they can use to help alleviate some of those side effects. And I just open with saying that because a lot of times people don't realize, hey, I'm feeling really bad. So this is normal. It's supposed to happen. Well, maybe, but there might be some ways to alleviate some of those side effects. So I'm going to talk about the role of the dietitian and how the dietitian can help support you. So a dietitian's on your healthcare team to provide you that individual direction on calorie, protein, fluid needs, texture modifications, suggestions when you're responding to side effects. And it's important that you are doing what you can with your nutrition because really nutrition and hydration are your key to tolerance to treatment. It's what's providing you energy to do the things that you enjoy. It's nourishing your body to function to its fullest. A lot of times people don't realize it, but the food is really functional. We eat food for the benefit and how it works in our body. And we get lost in that sometimes. I know it can be very confusing going to the grocery store. Oh, this is good for me. Is that good for me? You know, there's all kinds of labels on the boxes that sometimes can be a little bit misleading. But when you talk with a dietitian, it really needs to be about, okay, this is going to help you because you're going through this. Food is part of our culture. It brings us comfort. It brings us stability when things around us are ever changing. So there's an emotional component with food. What I talk about with patients is I'm not here to restrict you. I'm here to work through what you're going through with you to get you to the other side of this. Meeting your nutrition needs is important. Severe changes in weight loss and weight gain can be stressful on the body and stressful on the patient. And so sometimes we can't avoid some of those, but I'm going to kind of break it in two parts and start with, okay, if you're gaining weight, what do we need to look at? Well, I'm going to give you some suggestions. If you're gaining weight, that means you're probably in a good season with your treatment, meaning that you're not having a lot of side effects. Maybe you're taking steroids. Maybe you're taking a break from treatment. And we want to focus on keeping you at a healthy weight because shifts in weight can affect blood sugar. It can affect a lot of things inside of our body. And so focusing on a plant-based diet is going to be a good kind of center for you to kind of focus on. A plant-based diet means about two-thirds of your plate is covered with a food that comes from the earth. It's picked off a tree, it's pulled off a bush, it's pulled out of the ground, that it comes from a plant. So these are things are grains, fruits, vegetables, all of beans, peas, lentils, all of those are going to be a plant-based food. I also recommend eating on about a 9-inch plate. That's an average size plate. A lot of our plates are much larger than that. When we go out to eat, they can be up to 12 inches. But a 9-inch plate is a good way to control the portion size with what you're consuming. The other thing is you want to put on the other portion of that plate, the other third of that plate, we want to put a lean protein. And when we're eating plant-based foods and lean protein, it's kind of an organically, calorically optimal plan to help control overeating. The plate size helps you with limiting the portions that can be on the plate, and then the foods you're eating not only are functionally beneficial for you with fiber, phytochemicals, antioxidants, polyphenols, there's a multitude of benefits to our plant-based foods, and then the protein portion is going to help with rebuilding tissue and satiety and bringing healthy fats into your diet. So when we're picking the plant-based foods, I always remind patients, if it looks like it was when it was harvested, that's how you want to consume it. You don't need it in a drink. You don't need it in a shake. You don't need it in any way other than its original form. The reason why I bring this up is because if you're trying to control your weight, and maybe even get down to a more comfortable weight if you've potentially put on some weight, what we know is that drinking your calories is not satisfying. We see people who drink shakes and smoothies and all this sort of blended items and things like that. They put a whole bunch of food in there that would overfill a 9-inch plate for most people, and it ends up blending up to like a 12-ounce glass of fluid. But the fiber's been modified. It's not filling you up the same. You're not going through the same digestive process. So we're not absorbing at the same rate. So I bring this up because this is quite popular. So I tell people, just eat real food, okay? Frozen is actually superior to fresh. A lot of people don't know that. And it's a great way to have a variety of options in your freezer so you can pull out different fruits and vegetables based on what you're hungry for that day and you fiscally, you know, it's very friendly as well. When we talk about the protein sources, I tell people cold water fish, wild caught, avoiding farm-raised fish as much as possible. It doesn't matter if it's canned or if it's frozen or fresh. Wild caught is the way to go. The benefits of these foods, which are unique to them, is they have a special kind of fat in them. It's actually why in the cold regions they have this. It's because of the Arctic surroundings they live in. That fat is what's unique to it. It's the DHA and the EPA, or quote, the omega-3s. Omega-3s are unique. They help reduce inflammation. There's a lot of research around inflammation and chronic disease. And so reducing inflammation when your body's been through treatment is a great way to do it through diet. With our other lean proteins, they don't necessarily offer those same components, but they're not going to cause inflammation. So things like white-breasted poultry, chicken, and turkey, your very lean cuts of red meat, anything that ends in loin is going to be a leaner cut of meat. If you do a ground meat, you could do a bison or a buffalo. That's a very lean meat as well, or the very, very lean red meats are fine to bring in. And sometimes you can just do a plant-based meal. And calorically, this is going to help help you, because with two-thirds of the plate coming from a plant-based food, you're going to have a lot of fiber. It's going to help fill you up. You're also getting all these great benefits, right, the polyphenols, phytochemicals, and antioxidants, as well as with the protein portion, the omega-3s. Now, there are some omega-3s in our plant-based foods. They're in a different form that isn't transferred over the same way. So what I mean by that is when you get cold water fish and you have that omega-3 from that source, your body absorbs it one for one, okay? Sort of like the dollar, one for one when you're spending it here in the U.S. If you get a plant-based food, you know, really their benefits, the polyphenols, antioxidants, and the fibers, they have a type of omega-3, but it's known as alpha-linoleic acid, ALA. It's sort of like the peso. It takes a whole bunch of pesos to equal a dollar. So, yes, there is that benefit in our plant-based foods, but that's not what the majority of the food contains. It's really about those plant-based qualities. So I tell people bringing in cold water fish, it can, like I said, can be canned, it can be fresh. It doesn't matter, as long as it's wild caught, will help you with inflammation and help you get off any inflammation that you're holding onto, which actually when we have inflammation, we actually hold onto a lot of fluid. So sometimes that can also be a shift in weight people will notice. How much is enough for the cold water fish? Well, about 3 ounces is about 1 gram of DHA and EPA. That's our recommended amount each day. So it doesn't take a lot. You can get that in. Activity, as much as you can be active. This is part of the American Institute for Cancer Research guidelines, as well as the plant-based diet. But physical activity is important. It helps not only help build lean muscle mass, which helps burn calories, but it also helps with reducing inflammation. It helps with, flexibility, reducing your risk of injury. So a recommendation for them is about 30 minutes, 5 days a week of a moderate activity. You could go for a walk, you could mow the yard, whatever your energy level is at the time, whatever it is, building up to that is a great way to sort of help with that energy balance. Now, I want to talk a little bit about folks who are struggling on eating, because this is also the other side of it. And this is the one that sometimes I see when patients are going through a difficult time with eating, their sensitivity to smell, their sensitivity with taste, or their side effects, the nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, constipation, whatever it might be. People are like, here, just eat. Please, just eat anything you want. Just eat, just eat, just eat. And so what most people do is they're like, you know what, you love this lasagna that I make for you. Or you really, you know, this cake, I've made this cake for you. I know you love it. You'll eat it. And we get into this habit of just getting somebody to eat. And that's okay, because in the time, the season that you're in, it's okay to deviate from what we know is a more ideal plan for disease reduction risk. But sometimes those habits can become instilled and it can be a challenge to switch over. So I guess I bring this up because I want you to have the awareness that it's normal. If you're going through a hard season and you're eating foods that are more comforting, typically higher in fat and calories, most of the time more of a processed food, your flavor palate's going to start, you know, connecting with that, and it's going to feel good. And then all of a sudden you're out of that season and, oh gosh, I put on weight and I want to change it. So this can happen. But what you can try and do, and I tell people this, is integrate both of them. don't just go one extreme and say, here, just eat whatever you want to. Just say, hey, you know what? I tried this new, you know, bean patty. Just give it a whirl. See what you think. Let's add some avocado to it. Yeah, we can have a little cake for dessert. Not a problem. But really finding that balance where you're still bringing in some of the plant-based foods as well as those foods that can be very comforting. And small, frequent meals, especially when your appetite's less and you don't feel well, foods that have less odor can be better tolerated. So things that are usually room temperature or refrigerated, and you're trying to put weight on. So we don't want to overwhelm you. If you serve somebody a big meal and you're like, here, you've got to eat this lunch you haven't eaten all day, it's going to overwhelm the person. But the small amounts every 2 to 3 hours is a great way to get in calories and protein and it not feeling overwhelming to the patient. Staying hydrated. Hydration is massively important when it comes to appetite and our taste. When you're dehydrated, it can affect it. So 8 to 10 8-ounce glasses of fluid a day, unless directed by your physician, is a great baseline to start with, but you can get those unique, you know, individualized needs from your dietitian. Sometimes people will ask me for appetite stimulants or what supplement can I take to help with my appetite? And there's side effects to medications that can help with appetite. It doesn't mean it's not an appropriate potential intervention for a patient, but it's really you need to talk with the doctor, because with medications you're taking, it can sometimes cause blood clots or some other things, and we don't want any of those things to happen to patients unnecessarily. You know, I let patients know, you know, teas and herbals are totally fine. Try and purchase them where they're, you know, something you can read a label on and not just order it online. Sometimes I get patients who have questions around that. And I said, you know, it's just a tough season and we just have to kind of work with where we are. And each day, let's go to 2 hours. Let's go to 3 hours. Let's just work through this because it will come to an end eventually. Our supplements aren't regulated, so it can be a little challenging, but if you're monitored by a physician and you're taking one that is necessary because of a deficiency, that's a different story. But I caution you in doing over-the-counter things to try and assist with that without a doctor's oversight. So I want to give people some resources, and I really love the American Institute for Cancer Research. They have a free cookbook online. They give great suggestions for plant-based meals that can be used in both settings, if you're trying to lose weight and if you're trying to put weight on. It's just a matter of the portion size and maybe the frequency. So if we're trying to lose weight, try to stick to that 9-inch plate, eating the plant-based diet to fit on that plate. And then if you're trying to gain weight, we're going to do more frequent meals every couple 2 to 3 hours, focusing on including foods that may help with any side effects, such as avoiding smells, maybe temperatures, something that may upset someone's stomach. They're like, you know, I tried that, it didn't work. Okay, we'll avoid it. We'll try something else. The other thing, when you're trying to put weight on somebody, focusing on calorically dense foods is really helpful because you want to get the biggest bang for your buck with those. And those are going to be our protein sources, our healthy fats like nuts, seeds. You know, there's a lot of ways you can flavor nuts and seeds. There's great trail mixes out there. If for some reason you're told to avoid certain foods, maybe your levels are low and they're worried about an infection, so they may say avoid fresh fruits and veggies. That's okay. You can do that and still kind of fit in this window. I tell people all the time, you know, it's a season. So they may say, you know, just canned for now. I don't want you doing anything fresh. I don't want bacteria to potentially be an issue for you if your immune system's suppressed. Not all places, you know, not everybody is going to go through that, but if you do, there's a way through it and you can still make all of these fit. Support's very important. And I know, Carolyn, we talk a lot about on this show about connecting with your healthcare team, and that is absolutely essential. So please connect with your healthcare team. Something changes, let us know. If something's not working, let us know. And then we can work with you through that. But there's a way to make it all work. So I guess in closing, I just want to say, know your healthcare team, communicate with us soon, sooner rather than later, that a plant-based diet can fit at all stages of care, and we can still be nourishing and making those, making things work in the direction we're trying to get you, that you want to go in or need to go in, and still have a relationship with all foods can fit. So I hope this has been helpful. I'm going to close my portion of the talk, and I'm going to hand the line back over to Carolyn.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Bearden. That was very informative, and you were the first speaker, and you gave people so many tips and information. We will provide, of course, in the Survey Monkey evaluation you'll get in about a week, it'll include any of the references we've given to anyone on this call for resources. So I want to thank you, and I know the big questions to you during the Q&A. And our next speaker is is Dr. Christina Gowan, and Dr. Gowan is Associate Clinical Professor, Director of Education, Chung Family Center for Integrative Oncology, Departments of Supportive Care, Medicine, and Hematology, City of Hope Comprehensive Cancer Center. And Dr. Gowan will be addressing an overview of myeloproliferative neoplasm-related weight changes, benefits of physical activity, quality of life concerns, how meditation and integrative medicine may help you cope, and guidelines to prepare for telehealth, telemedicine appointments, including technology, prepared list of questions, quality of life concerns, and discussion of open notes. It is my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Gowan.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Messner, for that wonderful introduction, and thank you, Ms. Bearden, for a wonderful overview of nutrition. Oh, my goodness, there's so many wonderful pearls within that, and I learned even myself, so thank you so much. I want to honor everyone who's joining us throughout the nation and throughout the world, and to really honor your commitment to your own health and your own wellness, that it's not easy to proactively advocate to obtain knowledge and participate in these kinds of programs, and I think it really empowers you, and so kudos for joining today's call. I'm a hematologist, so I treat all spectrum of myeloproliferative neoplasms. And I will say that weight changes is certainly one of the most common symptoms that we deal with in clinic, and you may be experiencing this. And I remember doing a patient program in person, and afterwards, a woman ran up to me and said, "Okay, yes, my medicines are working. It's great. It's fantastic. My spleen is reducing. I have more energy, but I've put on 35 pounds the last year on my JAK inhibitor. What can I do?" And I would say that, you know, that's come up over and over and over, is that it's not only weight loss, which can be experienced certainly, particularly for those that have myelofibrosis, or if there's progression of disease and it's going to blast phase or some of the more aggressive kind of characteristics of the MPN, weight loss can occur, and certainly if we're using chemotherapy. But weight gain, more than anything, I think is what myeloproliferative neoplasm patients are really dealing with. And so what can cause it? Certainly, particularly in ETPV, we see weight as being an issue. And so fatigue-driven inactivity, right? If you are feeling exhausted, the last thing you want to do is get up and make something helpful or get up and start moving. So fatigue really is a driver for this weight gain. We, as I had already mentioned, use medications such as the class we call JAK inhibitors, and that's one of their side effects. It's one of the mechanisms of what occurs when you take that medicine. It actually alters something called leptin and our response to leptin, and so it changes the appetite. And so you may feel like you're not doing anything different or your appetite doesn't feel all that different, but there's something physiologically very different that's happening on a JAK inhibitor that's putting weight on. You can also see fluid retention with some of the medications, particularly steroids. And so all of those things are kind of like the perfect storm of what can occur in MPN patients as far as weight gain. We did a survey, and it was a very large survey of 858 patients all around the world. 52 different countries participated in this survey. And we found that about half of them were actually overweight, and 33% were obese. And so, you know, it's really an issue, and I think it's very important to address being overweight because it kind of propagates this fatigue, right? You don't feel your best. But also, when we're thinking about treating you as a whole person and thinking about what we're trying to accomplish when we're treating MPNs is we want to reduce the risk of blood clots. And so blood clots occur more frequently when you're overweight. And so one of the things that we do in clinic is focus on reducing cardiovascular risk factors. And so what does that mean? Things like sedentary behavior, a Western diet, having excess weight. So it's not only, you know, part of something that's a symptom, it's something that we need to modify to improve your disease outcomes. And I think that's another really important point is that this is part of not only symptom management, but your prescription plan. And it really, really is. And so Ms. Bearden gave some fantastic recommendations as far as what are things that you can do. The Mediterranean diet is certainly one of them, and that's that kind of plant-based, really vibrant colored fruits and veggies, lean meats, rich in omega-3 kind of diet. And I love the American Institute of Cancer Research. It's a wonderful resource and recommendation. I will also highlight that omega-3 fatty acids are incredibly important, and I know Ms. Bearden highlighted that too. And it's because of this anti-inflammatory mechanism that we see with omega-3 fatty acids. It really reduces inflammation. Now, again, in that same survey, we asked them what kind of supplements were you taking and what kind of foods were you eating. And those that were taking in the highest amounts of omega-3s had lower symptoms associated with their MPN. We call that the MPN symptom burden. So, again, that was a survey. It's not a randomized controlled trial, but it certainly, when we're thinking about food as medicine, eating a diet rich in omega-3 fatty acids really, really has important kind of rationale and chemistry around it. So that is something that you can really focus on and do and change if that's something that you're not already doing. In regards to that excess weight that we were talking about, you know, it's really calories in and calories expended. So there's many different apps out there, but I think sometimes we either underestimate or we overestimate what we're actually taking in. And so it can be really eye-opening to truly be disciplined for a week or two and say, okay, what's my true calorie count? And what's my true protein intake? And that way you can really make some educated kind of changes in your lifestyle. Also, so important to be discussing these changes with your doctor. And so rapid weight loss really should be addressed. Sometimes that can be a harbinger for something else physiologically going on, such as an abnormality within your thyroid gland, for example. Or maybe there's some progression of the myeloproliferative neoplasm that we really need to be evaluating. on the flip side, say you gain weight rapidly. Well, we need to know that as well. Sometimes that's an indicator of excess fluid, and maybe there's some heart or lung issues. So we really need to know. So I would say I wouldn't wait to educate your care team on those rapid changes, but send them a message through the electronic medical record or call and really let them know, and don't wait for your next, you know, 3-month follow-up. I want to echo again, staying hydrated is incredibly important. Sometimes keeping a food journal and a hydration journal can be helpful, again, just to kind of keep yourself accountable and see what's really going in. And then again, engaging in a very active lifestyle. So we're going to kind of move our conversation away from nutrition and more towards that indication of physical activity. And again, this is recommended by the American Institute of Cancer Research. So much research in cancer as an overall umbrella, particularly in breast cancer and colorectal cancer. We have very large and robust data sets of how it improves your longevity of life, and it improves the disease outcomes and cancer-associated mortality. So it really is, again, a part of the prescription plan. And it can be difficult, right? I know, particularly when there's fatigue, when there's bone pain or enlarged spleen. But thinking about how there's science to back it up, and that regular movement can reduce your symptoms like fatigue and improve your mood, it really is, it's worth the effort to kind of get out there, get moving, and kind of get over that initial hump, if you will, of getting some activity in. I keep going back to this survey, but in that same survey, we found that aerobic activity and strength training were associated with a lower symptom burden, a lower depression in those that were doing aerobic activity, yoga, and strength training, lower fatigue as well in aerobic and strength training. So all to speak that, yes, it's improving outcomes, it's helping to maintain a healthy weight, but it's also making you feel better. Your quality of life should be higher when you're moving. So recommendations are, okay, let's get moving, but how? Well, we look for a balance of aerobic. The American Cancer Society recommends about 150 minutes of kind of moderate activity per week as optimal. I recommend really kind of starting where you are, slowly tapering up, really listening to your body, and working even with a physical therapist or a physical medicine and rehabilitation doctor to kind of help direct you and your goals. We also like to see some strength training, right? We want to build that muscle mass, and there's actually been studies in hematologic patients showing that they're doing strength training during therapy, that they have better outcomes. So strength training also helps to maintain your bone mineral density, so keep that strength training in mind as well. I have many patients that say, oh yeah, I walk 5 miles a day every day, which is great, but I do want to encourage them and you all to add a little bit of that strength training in to increase that muscle mass. We also need some recovery, right? And what is recovery? So stretch and mobility, wonderful classes out there that you can stream even remotely to do some stretch and mobility, as well as meditative movement. So meditative movement are things like yoga, tai chi, qigong, lots of benefits beyond just the physical with these modalities, a lot of stress reduction. We know stress also improves, or the management of stress improves our outcomes and how we feel. We actually did a study of yoga, which is, again, a form of meditative movement, in those that have MPNs, and as little as 10 minutes a week actually made a difference in how they felt as well as their inflammation. So a little bit even goes a very long way. So whatever you can do, start where you are. Look for resources that resonate with you. Chair yoga, seated qigong, you know, even those can offer benefits. benefit. I recommend looking at what's around you, right? What are the cancer centers? What are the resources around you? What are some of the classes that are offered? Are they in person? Are they in remote? And do you have a buddy who can join you? Engage those that you love to be around you when you do this, because it's going to be more sustainable and more enjoyable. And do what you love. Think about activities that you've done in the past that maybe you can either modify or do for a shorter duration that can kind of get you back into movement in an enjoyable way. And again, always, always, always talk with your care team and make sure they know what you're doing. I had alluded to a little bit about stress, and so I want to kind of move our conversation away from nutrition, physical activity, and into the very important topic of stress management. We know stress changes the biochemistry of our bloodstream, that when we experience stress, and we all experience stress, even micro stresses throughout the day can make an impact, but stress then manifest to hormones and chemicals in our bloodstream. Norepinephrine, epinephrine, cortisol, you may have heard of all of these chemicals. Well, it changes the inflammation of our body and it changes the environment around cancer cells. So cancer cells are more apt to grow and to metastasize and to grow blood vessels, and the immune system is dampened in a stressed environment. So managing stress is critically important to your management plan of any cancer or chronic illness, but also myeloproliferative neoplasms. We know that MPNs have an immense amount of inflammation at their core, and we can measure that with cytokines. And so if there are mechanisms that we can control to change stress, to change inflammation that have no risk, then why not employ them? And so I do recommend any kind of stress reduction technique to my patients. And I have a few that are really, really potent. One is called 4-7-8 breathing, but really any breathing technique, there's a million out there, box breathing. Any meditation or mindfulness will do very similar things. But 4-7-8, we'll just spend a moment or two just talking about how simple that is, and you can even practice it here on the call today, where you essentially blow out everything you have in your lungs, breathe in deeply for the count of four, 1, 2, 3, 4, and you hold that for the count of 7, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then you breathe out fully and intentionally, like you're blowing out a candle, for the count of 8. So let's do one cycle of that. Breathe in, 1, 2, 3, 4, hold for 7, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and breathe out for 8, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And just take a moment and notice how different you feel even with one cycle of that breathing technique. And I recommend that you do 4 cycles of that. The true technique is 4 cycles of 4-7-8. And I give patients homework to do this first thing in the morning, 4 cycles, and at the evening time, 4 cycles. Because it's very much like a muscle where you have to strengthen it, to empower it, to make it as strong as it possibly can be for you. And then to use that any time that you recognize stress coming up in your life. It can help to improve fatigue. It can help to improve pain, anxiety, depression, and improve sleep quality. And so I recommend for you to play around with that and find if that's a good breathing technique for you. But if not, find one that fits. Find a pattern and a rhythm that fits for you. But breathing is one of the most powerful meditation techniques that we have. Mindfulness-based stress reduction is another one, and there's a lot of different companies and facilities that will actually lead mindfulness training courses. This is one of the most evidence-based management tools that we have in all of medicine, in integrative medicine. And so it's very simple. It's very similar to even the breathing technique that we just learned, but it's just being mindfully aware of your own body, of your own breath, as well as the surroundings around you, as well as your thought processes. So you're kind of just watching the experience of being. And so, again, it's really nice to do this as a group or as a partner with a loved one, but I encourage you to look for local resources or online resources to look at mindfulness meditation as a stress reduction strategy. Other integrative approaches. So integrative medicine is really everything that we can do to complement our Western care in an evidence-based way. And so many of the things have been utilized for ages across many cultures, including acupuncture, Tai Chi, massage. These can be helpful for the management of weight because, again, if we get at the root cause of fatigue, inactivity, or some of the pain limitations, then we can get back to moving and get back to healthful choices. So that can be another consideration is really looking at the resources around you for acupuncture, Tai Chi, massage. Finally, we'll move to how to prepare for a telehealth visit, which is really more of a practical skill, but it's a skill that's incredibly necessary in today's healthcare environment. We're doing more and more telemedicine. So just a few kind of logistical pearls is number one. Be sure to check your technology beforehand. I can't tell you how many times I've logged into a telemedicine appointment and we weren't able to get the camera on or the microphone. So if you kind of tinker with those modalities beforehand, it might be a little bit smoother. The headphones are nice. You get a little bit better audio and privacy with headphones. And if you have good lighting, it helps us to see you more clearly so we can really assess if there's any skin or color changes. It's also helpful to have a list of questions. We love to know about your symptoms, so keep track of your symptoms. Let us know how it's been going over the last 3 months. Even do what's called an MPN, symptom assessment form, which you can find online. If you do that beforehand, you're really primed for understanding where your symptoms have been. And I find that some patients even track that on an Excel spreadsheet. Thinking about medication side effects, your lab results, and any concerns that you have, you want to bring that to the table. Also remember, many times you have access to the prior notes, kind of these open notes that you can see in the portal, for example, at your medical system. So you can go back to past notes and refresh your memory, and then when you're done after the appointment, you can actually go back and say, oh, what did they say again, and kind of just refresh your conversations, and that's a really wonderful tool. Again, just another plug for the MPN symptom assessment form. This is a very important quality of life measurement tool that often we'll administer as physicians in the office. But we don't always have time or it's not in the workflow. So if you come prepared with that in hand, it can be very, very efficient in telehealth or otherwise. So in closing, you all have more power than you think. Lifestyle medicine through nutrition, movement, stress reduction really gives you tools to feel better every day. So think about also integrative medicine from acupuncture to mindfulness, that it can help manage your weight, your fatigue, your pain, and anxiety. be sure to ask questions and advocate for yourself. And thank you so much. I'll end, and I think we'll hand it over to Dr. Messner for completion of the program. But thank you for joining.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Gowan. That was just a superb presentation, stellar in every way. And I know that people have a lot of takeaways. We'll have a lot of questions for you during the Q&A, so thank you so much. And now I'm just going to say a few words about cancer care services, and then we're going to go on to some questions I'm going to ask all of you that are live streaming, and then we will take the Q&A. So be sure to give us all your questions that you have. I just want to thank Dr. Gowan for just such a superb presentation. And so I'm just going to say a few words about cancer care services. Now, cancer care is a national nonprofit organization providing services throughout the United States. And we have a number of services. I'm just going to go over some of them with you. They're all free, and they all will be available to you at no cost. So we do offer practical, financial, and co-payment assistance. And, of course, in this era right now, of course, those are big issues for people. We also do offer online support groups, and we have online support groups on coping with MPNs, on integrative medicine, on different types of cancers, for young adults, older adults, caregivers. So we do have a number of different types of online support groups. We also do a number of these workshops, about 70 or 80 per year, and again, on many different topics and types of cancers as well. We also offer publications. You can download them from our website, and we have quite a few on MPNs. And we also offer fact sheets and, of course, many other services. And you can access all the services that we offer from our website at www.cancercare.org. So now we're going to move on to the Q&A. And I'm going to ask Rob to explain to you how to queue up for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we'll take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
So a question for Dr. Gowan. Any suggestions on brain fog?
Yes, brain fog is a real issue, and we see that in many different cancer types, and it's both disease-related as well as therapy-related. And I think the best resolution for brain fog is exercise. And so getting some aerobic exercise certainly helps with clearing the brain fog. It's not a 100% fix, but it does definitely help. There are some, if you're interested in supplements and things, you may go online and read about lion's mane, for example. We're not quite there as far as having enough data to support using the medicinal mushrooms for brain fog. So I just like to address that because that does come up relatively often. Ginseng now, however, there is some evidence to recommend that for fatigue. Some folks note anecdotally that there's improvement in their brain fog, but as always, be talking with your doctor. Be sure that they are comfortable with any supplement use, and be sure that it's well-sourced. Many of them are not well-sourced, so they should have quality stamps of approval like USP, NSF, or GMP are good quality supplements. Be talking to your doctor, though. It would never recommend any supplement use without the team being involved. And again, exercise is the best medicine. So get moving first, do your mindfulness, and eat a very healthful diet, and see if that clears things up first before ever doing anything that is more esoteric like the supplements.
Excellent. Thanks so much. And another question for you, Dr. Gowan. My arthritis, osteo, and triggers thumb carpal tunnel has gotten so much worse after 3 months on Benzremi. Is this unusual? Mm-hmm. It makes it hard to write exercise, yoga. I'd love any suggestions. We'll try any. Then she feels that her healthcare team often dismiss my symptoms outside of blood work. Is this usual? Is this unusual?
Yeah, Besremi. So Besremi is an interferon-related medication that's an injection that has come out about 2 years ago. And it definitely is associated with a whole host of different side effects, of which kind of arthralgias or flu-like joint pains can occur. And I've seen that in a whole host of my own patients. I borrow this from the literature from breast cancer, but in breast cancer, women take something called an aromatase inhibitor, which is a hormonal blocker, and one of the side effects of that is major joint pains. And so they did a randomized controlled trial saying, well, if the patients do acupuncture alongside, can we reduce the joint pains, and can we keep our patients on the aromatase inhibitor? And lo and behold, at 12 weeks of acupuncture, that these women were able to maintain their compliance with their medicine and had less pain scores than those that were on a weightless control or a sham acupuncture. And so not yet done in myeloproliferative neoplasms, but I do think that it behooves us to try at least to give a trial. I think a trial is something that is once per week or twice per week if you can swing it for at least a month to see if you get some benefit. I always want to recommend some caution if, for example, your platelets, usually this isn't the case for folks on Besremi, but if your platelets are very low, if your neutrophils or your white blood cells are very low, you want to express caution with acupuncture. You want to tell your acupuncturist all the medicines that you're on and what your laboratories are, but I think acupuncture might be a really great symptom management tool. Also, just to echo that it's inflammation, right? And what do we do to modulate inflammation? That's all the things, right? You're going to hear it's like a broken record, but nutrition, exercise, mindfulness, all of that will help too.
Excellent. Thank you. And for Ms. Bearden, can you recommend any meal services or resources I can use for when it is difficult for me to go out and get groceries or cook?
Absolutely. So there's a lot of different options. I'm not sure what part of the world or country you're in, but I know a lot of the local grocery stores here, Kroger's, Randall's, we have HEB in Texas. They have a lot of meals that aren't frozen, they're a fresh prepared meal, and they'll have them in the ready-made section, and you can pick those up. I know at the grocery stores I go to, there's, you know, a salmon, a tuna, you know, salmon steak, tuna steak with a veggie and maybe a small potato. Another thing is there's a lot of online meal ordering, and some of them, they'll deliver the food to your house and you have to do the food, like you have to actually cook the food. There's one, and it's escaping my mind right now, but it'll come to me here in just a second. Like things like Home Chef, Blue Apron, there's a lot of them that will deliver to the home. Everything's in the HelloFresh. I know it's been around a while. There's factor meals, and they have like menus online where they'll cycle it. I think it's like every week or every 2 weeks, most of them, and you can pick and choose your meals, and basically they're sent to your house. Some of them you can just directly warm in the oven, or some of them you actually prepare, you chop the things up and you prepare them, but it has everything you need in the package. So those might be helpful options for you to consider.
And I guess I could ask their local dietitian. There are four suggested resources right in their community as well.
Absolutely. Anything in their community. And there's some national ones. The ones that I mentioned are national. They'll ship anywhere in the U.S., the states. Those are some that are just national. But, yes, absolutely check out anything local. There's one called Mom's Meals. That's another one I've had patients use. It's a variety. And the good thing about Mom's Meals that I like is it offers texture modifications. So somebody who may need a softer texture or somebody who's diabetic and needs that portion control, they offer that. Pureed, you know, there's a wide variety of individual needs the patient may have. So I know those meals, they actually modify the texture if needed. And again, that's Mom's Meals.
Excellent. And we will provide everyone all the resources that Ms. Dearden provided, and so you'll have them. Okay. And I'm just going to ask our speakers to provide a takeaway. So I'm going to ask Ms. Bearden if you could start with a takeaway.
Absolutely. I think the biggest thing, and we kind of heard it echoed throughout our talk today, is the importance of communicating with your healthcare team sooner rather than later. We're here to support you, and everybody's individual. Remember that. You may be going through some things, but everybody's individual, so your severity and experience, please communicate with your team. They may decide to make a change or offer you an option to help with that side effect. Don't struggle for absolutely no reason, and reach out to everybody on your healthcare team. We're here to support you.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Thanks. Thank you so much, Ms. Bearden. And Dr. Gowan.
Well, I would like to say that the whole landscape of myeloproliferative neoplasm treatment is changing, and it's really an exciting time that we're getting new drugs and therapies that are now modifying kind of the course of illness, which is wonderful. It used to be where we're just kind of treating the blood counts, but now we're actually getting to some medicines that are getting to the underlying root cause of illness. So it's a really exciting time in medicine, but I think it's also exciting from a supportive care standpoint that we're evolving and we're integrating nutrition and lifestyle medicine and some of these other integrative modalities like acupuncture, massage, mind body to standard of care. And patients are really feeling the difference. Your quality of life is improving with this approach. So I think it's a really hopeful time in medicine and for particularly for MPNs that there's a lot to do that can empower your journey. So thank you so much again for this wonderful program.
Oh, thank you so much. And we have a few late-breaking questions I just want to ask Dr. Gowan. I find myself so fatigued throughout the day to the point where I spend most of my time in bed. I want to start exercising or just be more active, but I can't get out of bed. Can you recommend any exercises or ways to get started?
Yeah. Well, you're not alone. We've done a lot of research in this area, and up to 80% of folks with MPNs will have fatigue, and a fair amount will have debilitating fatigue of what you're experiencing. So I honor and validate your journey, and it's really, really tough. To get moving, I think first we need to better understand, is there anything else that is contributing to your fatigue? So I always want to, I recommend working with your doctor, looking at thyroid panel, for example, optimizing any anemia, if that exists, looking at your medications, are there medications that potentially could be contributing to fatigue? And if we've done all of those things, then it's also the lifestyle, right? Are you eating the foods that we had talked about? Are you managing stress? Is there an element of depression? And if there is, managing that. And then, after all of that work is done, then it's about little microbursts. And so I've done exercise implementation even for patients undergoing bone marrow transplant. And so it can start even in the bed, right? Getting moving, doing some overhead stretches, some ankle pumps, some sit-ups. So just trying to get moving just a little bit. Having a yoga mat next to the bed, all you have to do is roll out of bed and get a little bit of motion and a little bit of yoga, even if it's, again, only 5 or 10 minutes. And then I think trying to get something outside is another recommendation that a lot of time that natural light really is helpful. So putting a exercise bike outside or going for a small walk in the sunlight can be really helpful. So those are kind of just little suggestions, but little bouts of activity throughout the day and short bursts can be a helpful way to start.
Thank you so much. And then another question, are there any other specific MPN treatments associated with weight gain?
Oh, well, certainly that we use sometimes steroids, and so steroids can certainly cause weight gain, both fluid, and it also increases the appetite, and so you can have true weight gain with some of the steroid administrations. Some of the newer therapies, the antibody therapies that are coming out, the interferons, most of those are really a weight loss. And so I would say that the JAK inhibitors are relatively unique as having such a large impact in weight gain. But having said that, there with any therapy, right, there are potential of side effects, potential of changing kind of the lifestyle and not feeling your best. And so that can just lead to weight gain, right? We're no longer doing the same things or feeling the same way, so perhaps our patterns are changing.
And this will be the last question. Are there safety precautions I should consider while exercising with MF?
Yes, thank you so much. I am so glad somebody asked that question, and I really should have highlighted this, that yes, so the spleen, you should know the size of your spleen, and if you have a significantly enlarged spleen, or if it's symptomatic, right, if you feel abdominal discomfort or say you eat a meal and you feel full quickly, that's called early satiety, these are signs that your spleen is enlarged. We always recommend avoiding any high-impact sport, so things like downhill skiing, certainly football, those kinds of things, because with impact, the spleen can rupture. And so that's really a concern. When we did our yoga trial, we did modifications, right? Downward dog, for example, does not feel good when you have an enlarged spleen. So really listening to your body, doing the modifications, and avoiding any of those impact sports with splenomegaly.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I want to thank our speakers. You've actually been phenomenal in terms of just just your presentations, and I want to thank our participants for asking such really great questions, really amazing questions, and I think that although we have done these programs in the past, this was probably one of the best because we had such great questions and really such great speakers to address this. And we also, this is an important program, which is one we'd like to offer again, because clearly there has been a great deal of interest in this topic and a lot of excellent questions. And I want to comment on the questions. Because there were so many of you on the call, we couldn't take everyone's question. We took a lot of questions, but we couldn't take everybody's question. So I want you all to go back to your healthcare team. And if you asked a question during the program, please ask your question again from your healthcare team. Remember, they have all your medical records and all the information about you. And you also have learned a great deal during this program. And so, therefore, be sure that you ask the questions with the information that you learned today. Also, for those of you who are in queue and haven't had a chance to ask your question, please also take your questions to your healthcare team. Remember, again, they have your medical records. They know everything about you. And you'll also ask your questions in a more informed way. Also, before we conclude the program, I do remind all of you that it seems that people have the hardest time reaching their healthcare team on evenings, weekends, and holidays. We've just passed a number of holidays, but there are going to be more coming up. And so always ask your healthcare team who is available evenings, weekends, and holidays. It seems that during the day, usually you can reach somebody, but those other times are harder to reach someone. So be sure that you have their telephone numbers to contact. So again, I want to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone have a great day.